Hi, I'm Rosemary Martorana, Director of Intelligence here at the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, and you're listening to Intelligence Unclassified. This podcast is exactly what the title states, unclassified information about current trends in homeland security for the state of New Jersey, as well as educational information and resources for your awareness. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. Please feel free to add this podcast to your RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow NJOHSP on Twitter at NJOHSP and Facebook. All links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njohsp.gov. Hello, I'm here with Dr. Chris Rodriguez from the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness. Today we're going to be talking a little bit about the role of the Homeland Security Advisor in New Jersey. And so with that, I'll turn it over to Director Rodriguez, who I'll refer to as Chris for the remainder of this podcast, to talk a little bit about his role, as well as how our office is structured and the mission of our office.
Sure. Thanks, Rosemary. The role of the HSA in New Jersey is to serve as the governor's principal advisor on counterterrorism, cybersecurity, and resiliency. And our office is structured along those three key mission areas. We have three substantive divisions. Intelligence focuses mostly on the counterterrorism mission, policy and planning on our resiliency and emergency preparedness mission, and then our Division of Cybersecurity, which leads and coordinates the state's cyber mission. So I think that we have properly aligned ourselves to do our best and to hire the best and the brightest in order to fulfill the governor's priorities on those three areas.
Great. So I want to focus a little bit of our discussion today on the counterterrorism mission of our office. And to begin with, we've pushed out a lot of products probably over the last 18 months or so that have gone out publicly, meaning posted on our website and available to our constituents throughout New Jersey, and for that matter, nationally. Do you think it's made a difference or made our public more aware of the threats we're facing here in New Jersey by doing this?
I absolutely think it's made a huge difference. And we, along with you, as you became the Director of Intelligence, we had a lot of discussions early on in my tenure almost 2 years ago, where we looked at the shifting landscape of the terrorist threat environment, not only here in New Jersey, but across the country and across the globe. And we have seen that terrorism threat evolve in a way that it's become much more decentralized and diffuse. And in that threat environment, we often view the public as our first line of defense. And so we've made a concerted effort to begin to publish unclassified intelligence and to push that out to the public. And one of the ways that I know that it's made a difference is our readership of our products has increased, and we have data to support that. We have more people than we ever have subscribing to our social media feeds and looking to us following terrible events that have happened across the country for answers and for information on what we know about the threat. And not only has that come from the public, but it's also come from the press. We are now the first organization that they'll come to ask for information on that. And I think those are key indicators that we've been successful.
Excellent. So staying on the theme of public engagement, especially as it relates to the contending issue of homegrown violent extremism in the United States, or HVEs, in our threat assessment this year, we talked about HVEs as the greatest threat to New Jersey, of course, followed by the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, or ISIS, and Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, or AQAP. In your opinion, what makes an HVE more dangerous, per se, than any of these overseas organizations?
And certainly this is not to diminish the threat that ISIS and groups like AQAP pose, but the unique threat that HVEs pose is that their activities are often very difficult to detect and deter in the way traditional, at least post-9/11, terrorism plots have evolved and have been disrupted, where traditional intelligence collection methods have been able to infiltrate and to collect on advanced or ongoing plots across the world. Now, with the HVE threat, we see individuals acting on their own, largely inspired by foreign terrorist organizations, but with little to no notice. You see the attacks in San Bernardino, Orlando, and Brussels, where these individuals acted without the sanction or support of a foreign terrorist organization, but were inspired by them. And they can do a lot of damage and attack in public gathering areas that have almost a jarring effect on free and open societies.
So let's break that definition down a little bit. You mentioned that homegrown violent extremists are individuals that are here in the United States, however, are inspired by a foreign terrorist organization like ISIS or Al-Qaeda. And this is something we've been talking a lot about within our analysis bureau here in the office, is how are we going to define an HVE moving forward? And really how that definition may have even shifted in the last year from someone who's just simply inspired by a foreign terrorist organization to now, of course, with the advent of social media, to individuals being remotely directed by overseas organizations or individuals in those overseas organizations. Any thoughts on that or how we maybe need to redefine HVEs in the future?
Certainly. So the traditional definition of HVEs that we put forth in the threat assessment are individuals that are inspired by foreign terrorist organizations to do violence. And I think we have to be very nimble as a Homeland Security enterprise in how we go about defining the threat. And certainly in the case of HVEs, their activities will drive how we define them. And my sense is that over the next year to several years, we will have to shift our definition as our adversaries also shift their tactics. Now, this will help, of course, better prioritize and help law enforcement and the intelligence community, I think, try to detect and deter some of these activities. But I think we do have to be ready to shift our definitions as their tactics also shift.
Great. And I'm curious, you know, over the last few months, we've seen reports that ISIS is really on the decline in Iraq and Syria. And I'm curious to hear your opinion on if that's a parallel relationship. In other words, as some of these overseas organizations decline or are removed from their strongholds, do we also see HVEs who are inspired by those organizations start to taper off? Or on the flip side of that, will we continue to see HVEs act in response to the calls by these organizations? Or at least those HVEs that are following ISIS?
Certainly, we've seen ISIS have military setbacks in Iraq, in Fallujah, and in Mosul, for example. But it is important to note that their stronghold in Syria remains very potent, and the ongoing civil war there creates an atmosphere of chaos that works to ISIS's advantage. And I think that as ISIS begins to endure battlefield losses in Iraq, we could see an uptick in external operations, not only here in the United States, but more likely in Europe, where it is easier, of course, for operatives to reach the continent. So we might begin to see ISIS shift from solely operating in its area of operations in Iraq and Syria and begin to inspire individuals to conduct external operations as a way to highlight their operational potency as they begin to endure battlefield losses in the traditional areas of operation.
And I think we've already seen that, as you said, to a certain extent, especially in France and Belgium with the Paris attacks last year, to the Brussels attacks in March, and even the attacks in Nice, France. So that's a really good point. This year, we also coined the term blended extremists, which in the threat assessment, we refer to those individuals as perhaps adhering to numerous ideologies and or groups rather than simply one ideology or one structured foreign terrorist organization. In your opinion, are blended extremists more concerning than HVEs, or are they of particular concern to us here in New Jersey and in the United States?
I think this goes back to your question on how we define HVEs and how those definitions might shift in the future. Blended extremists, yes, they do draw from a number of ideologies and groups as a way to legitimize violent acts. And they're of particular concern because we don't know, or it's very difficult for law enforcement, Homeland Security officials to know the underlying justifications for violence, whether they're inspired by ISIS or by domestic extremist ideologies that might exist here in the United States. And so that blending makes someone particularly susceptible to the types of violence that we're seeing around the world. And I think it accurately, that definition or the term of blended extremism is more and more beginning to accurately describe the types of terrorism that we are seeing, not only here in the United States, but in Europe.
So a little good news here. New Jersey has been awarded $4.2 million in Homeland Security funding, which is the second highest award amount in the nation. Can we talk a little bit about how these funds might be applied to mitigate the threat of HVEs and terrorism as a whole in our state?
One of the core functions of NJOHSP is to serve as the state administrative agent for all federal Homeland Security grant money that comes into New Jersey. And we're very proud that over the last 2 years, and certainly since you and I have been in these roles, we have lobbied aggressively and advocated aggressively, not only to the federal government directly, but through our congressional delegation for increased funding for security for institutions that are most vulnerable to violence. And the nonprofit security grant program, the $4.2 million that we received, will go towards hardening some religious institutions within our state. And as you had mentioned, Rosemary, we are proud that that $4.2 million represented almost more than doubling of our allocation from 2015. And so we hope to very shortly disseminate those funds to the institutions that were awarded and to work with them to ensure that they use that money to properly harden their institutions.
Great. And finally, you mentioned that this money will be going towards nonprofit organizations such as religious institutions. Can we just quickly talk about what ways our office has really forged a more positive relationship with our local communities?
Yes, absolutely. And we do that through the Interfaith Advisory Council. We do it through some of the outreach that you had mentioned, Rosemary, in the beginning, in terms of disseminating our products publicly, making sure we're constantly assessing and reassessing the needs and requirements of our constituents so that we can tailor products and briefings to their specific operational environments. And we are also helping some of our constituents, and particularly with the Nonprofit Security Grant Program, develop and draft strong proposals for that money. So I think we are being extremely proactive in trying to reach out to our constituents, ensuring that they have the resources to be able to put better security measures in place so that they can protect the people that they serve.
All right, great. So Chris, for your final question, your favorite New Jersey singer? Bruce Springsteen, Frank Sinatra, Bon Jovi, or Whitney Houston?
It definitely has to be Sinatra. I mean, the leader of the Rat Pack, just a legend, someone whose music I listened to growing up. So it definitely has to be Sinatra.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Well, thanks for jumping on today's podcast. We look forward to the series being released. And as always, it's a pleasure working with you.
Thank you.
Again, all links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njohsp.gov. Thanks again for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified.